About to begin for the benefit of Open Signal. Let me pull up my participants list here. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Thursday, May 28th. Afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Carla, good afternoon. Could you please call the roll?
Good afternoon, Mayor. Hardesty?
Here.
Udaly?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by phone, and the City has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The public can, of course, also provide written testimony to the council through the council clerk. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. As always, thank you for your continued patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to do the city's business. And with that, we'll now hear the rules of order and decorum from our legal counsel. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, council. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony today should address the matter being considered. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected for the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded. Thank you.
Very good. Carla, could you please read our one item for today, item 411?
Yes, readopt remanded ordinance for the Central City 20 plan and amend the comprehensive plan map, transportation system plan, Willamette Greenway plan, scenic resources protection plan, and zoning map, authorize adoption of administrative rules, and repeal and replace prior Central City plans and documents.
Thank you. We're here today to consider an ordinance to address a narrow, singular issue for the City of Portland Central City 2035 plan, a 20-year plan for our city's urban core. And just as a reminder, City Council adopted the Central City 2035 plan back in June of 2018, voting in support of Ordinance 189000. After extensive public engagement, cross-bureau coordination, and staff analysis. The June 2018 decision was appealed to the Land Use Board of Appeals, sometimes called LUBA, and subsequently to the State Court of Appeals. LUBA found, and the Court of Appeals agreed, that the findings related to one decision, changes to the allowed heights in the new Chinatown-Japantown Historic District, were not adequate to show compliance with the comprehensive plan policies. LUBA and the Court of Appeals remanded the issue back to the city to fix. Today, I'm pleased that the city is able to consider readopting new adequate findings in order to fix the issue identified in the courts because of the staff's hard work. The proposal before us is to readopt the Central City 2035 plan as originally approved in Ordinance 189000, with expanded findings that fully remedy the issues identified in the original LUBA remand. It is important to get this process fixed right and important to resolve this narrow issue quickly. I understand that there may be testimony today on parts of Central City 2035 that are outside the scope of the decision before council. I don't want to disregard or minimize this testimony. I want my staff and BPS staff to listen to this testimony, even if it falls outside the scope, to reach out to those who give council testimony and identify if there are any active policy proposals that could potentially address some of the issues that were raised in that testimony. The City Council's role, in contrast, today is to remain focused on resolving the remand and helping the city move forward on the June 2018 decision. So with that, I will now turn this over to
Mayor.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. For the record, I need to let you know that I have reviewed the record and I am up to date and ready to fully participate in the vote today.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate that. It's important that we have you here. So good. Thank you for doing that, taking care of that. We'll turn it over to Joe Zender from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And I noticed that on the script, we did not, and this was an inadvertent oversight, we did not include the members from the Landmarks Commission. So after Joe completes BPS's presentation, I'm going to ask Kristen Miner, who is our Landmarks Commission chair, and I believe she has her vice chair, Maya Fodi, with her to give a presentation as well. But we'll start with Joe Zender from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Welcome.
Mayor, this is Sally Edmonds from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Joe Zender is having a little bit of trouble logging in. So he'll be right with you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, I hear Joe.
Yes.
All right. You've got it, Joe.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. Sorry for that confusion.
No worries.
So, and Keelan, if we could start the screen share, I'll get going. Thank you. Thank you very much. Everyone, I'm Joe Zender. Good afternoon. I'm with the Chief Planner with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I have a short presentation today about what we're considering, which is the readoption of portions of the Central City 2035 plan that were previously approved in Ordinance 189-000. We have not made any substantive changes to the plan. The only changes we've made have been to the findings in response to the remand of the plan by the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals, which later, as I go on, I'm going to refer to as LUBA. Next slide, please. In 2018, the Portland City Council approved the first update of the Central City Plan since the 1980s. It was a product of a massive effort that stretched over years. It aged me, I will let you know that. Central City, the City Council alone held 7 public hearings, 5 deliberation sessions, a final vote on the ordinances related to this plan. The plan covers all of the parts of the central city, the east side, the west side, all 11 sub-districts of the central city, as well as the Willamette River. It also includes policy code changes and investment plans for the central city to be able to grow and advance the comp plan goal, which is to make Portland a prosperous, healthy, equitable, and resilient city. The plan went into effect in July 2018, so projects could start using the code right away and get implementation of the plan going. While the project is under remand, those projects are on hold, and new projects that want to use the new code are unable to start. Next slide, please. So as the mayor said, LUBA felt that the findings related to changes in allowed heights in the new Chinatown, Japantown Historic District did not have adequate justification to show compliance with Comprehensive Plan Policy 4.48. That policy called for new development to show continuity with existing urban fabric for a district. The policy expects that there's going to be new development and calls on it to contribute to the district in a variety of ways, but in particular in filling gaps where there's vacancies or empty lots in the urban fabric and to help preserve and complement historic resources and a district's character. To respond to the remand, the city must show that the actions proposed in the new Chinatown, Japantown Historic District which include height increases and others, combine to meet this policy 4.48. Next slide, please. First, let's take a look at what the comp plan means when it uses the term established urban fabric. This refers to the combination of design and architecture and uses, culture and history, and other characteristics of a district. This slide here breaks out some of those elements for you. So let's start at the street level with the pedestrian realm. This includes the scale of the block, how long the block is, the character of the street, and the attractiveness of the sidewalk and the entrance of the buildings and the storefronts and that whole design to people who are actually using the sidewalks, visiting the buildings, and using the buildings. The pedestrian realm, in many ways, is the most important part of the urban fabric in a central city for the simple reason that it's the part that on a day-to-day basis, most of us experience. The second sort of level of urban fabric, in this diagram at least, deals with the building program, which refers to how the technology, the way the building is constructed, affects the way the building is designed. Steel frame buildings, masonry buildings, timber buildings have a different characteristics. It also refers to how the building's used. Is it housing? Is it an office? Is it a commercial use, or is it some other use? The final piece of this urban fabric definition includes the architecture of the building. And this is kind of things like its architectural style, arrangement of the mass of the building, arrangement of the height, and the exterior materials. Next slide, please. So what is the condition and what do we know of urban fabric in New Chinatown, Japantown? First, the district consists of 10 200 by 200 foot blocks bounded by typical central city streets, except for Burnside, which is wider and was widened in 1931, and except for Fifth Avenue, which is part of the transit mall and has a transit station. In terms of the use of the district and what's built there, that's shown in the diagram to the left, 40% of the district's land is used by structures that contribute to the historic character of the district. Those are buildings that are built from 1880 to 1943. They're shown in the yellow or gold color in that diagram. 36% of the districts are non-contributing or new buildings. And 23, almost 24% of the land is either in surface parking or vacant lots. And that's the area shown in white on the diagram. Building heights in Chinatown, Japantown range from one story to 16 stories. 16 stories is at least 160 feet tall. A big part of the urban fabric story is in other elements, including the architectural style of the buildings in the district that's shown in the diagram to the right. The building massing that is typical district, which in this district is a blocky form. Typical materials, which here is brick, and a consistent street wall in terms of the height and design and points of access entrances on the street and the pedestrian realm. The evolution of a district is also reflected in its urban form. In this district, building massing, over time, it has been common in this district for buildings of different heights to be adjacent to one another. That's nothing unusual here, and it hasn't been through the history of the district. Also over time, the communities that called the district home introduced Chinese and Japanese cultural adaptations to the fabric, such as horizontal balconies, long awnings, projecting signs, flags, and banners. And these are very important sort of elements of this district and elements in the guidelines that have been created for this district. But as you can see, from this list, the building height is in New Chinatown, Japantown is not the only, or in some ways even the most distinctive element of the district's urban fabric. And so as we consider the height discussion, we need to consider it in the context of all these different pieces that make up urban fabric. Next slide, please. So the goals in the Central City 2035 plan for New Chinatown, Japantown, and Old Town. They were considered one district in that plan, are to preserve these districts' historic and culturally significant elements, to continue, especially in Chinatown, Japantown, the social service agencies that play a critical public health role in the city and in the region. Third, to support the vitality of the commercial and educational uses that have developed in the district. And finally, to add a balanced mix of market rate, student, and affordable housing to this mix of uses that makes up the district. And this last one has been sort of a goal for the strategy for New Chinatown, Japantown for decades. So one of the actions in Central City 2035 was to change the maximum allowable building heights as shown in this slide. You can see the existing heights are shown on the left-hand side, south of Everett, that's 100 feet, north of Everett, that includes 350 to 425 feet. If you're north of Everett, Everett is the street that's just below the Lansu Classical Chinese Garden. So within the Central City 2035 plan, specifically the heights for the blocks north of Northwest Everett were reduced from a maximum height of 425 to 200 feet. The height allowances on one block south of Northwest Everett, block 33, shown in this diagram, were increased from 100 feet to 125 feet, with bonus height being available along the Fifth Avenue frontage of up to 200 feet. Next slide, please. So the question that the remand asks is, how does this change and other actions in Central City 2035 combine to meet policy 4.48 in New Chinatown, Japantown? First, let's look at how Central City 2035 ensures new development helps preserve historic urban fabric and resources. First, all new development remains subject under Central City 2035, is still subject to review by the Landmarks Commission or by BDS staff. And Central City 2035 has added new, more specific guidelines that are going to be used in this review. And the development of those new guidelines was a prerequisite in the planning process for us to even be able to discuss changing heights in this district. Secondly, we kept the current regulations that are on the books requiring review prior to the proposed demolition of historic structures and made clear in the findings for this proposal that the proposed height of new development can be reduced through the historic resource review process. That review process is dealing with state-regulated resources and has the power, we believe, to reduce heights if it's found necessary on a case-by-case basis. Third, we reduced height limits, as I mentioned, on four blocks from 425 to 200. We believe that this height limit ensures that the new scale of development is appropriate for, at its most, at its greatest, is appropriate for the scale of a 200-foot by 200-foot block. And also, because of the presence of contributing structures on these lots north of Everett where we've done this height reduction, the 200 feet allows the opportunity for development of those lots while still preserving the buildings. Fourth, I want to mention the shadow analysis shown here in the yellow shade to the south and west of the Lansu Classical Chinese Garden. This is an approach that we've used around public open spaces elsewhere in the central city, and it requires an analysis defined in the zoning code of whether or not proposed new development casts excessive shadow, in this case on the Lansu Garden. If it does, it has to be adjusted as not approvable, and that test has to be passed as part of the review process prior to development. Next slide, please. So the second part of this equation is how does the the strategies in the Central City 2035 plan use infill development to increase the compatibility and preservation of the district to meet comp plan policy 4.48. First, we did not reduce any of the amount, in all the changes we made in this district, we kept the total amount of square feet that you could develop the same, except for the allowance of additional square feet on Block 33 if that redevelopment is residential and part of the inclusionary housing program. We also continue to allow the inclusionary housing bonus to be used. We allowed the historic transfer to be used. So all the square feet that you could build there today is still there. Because of the condition, as I showed earlier, of this district, we know it's essential for new development to take place to be able to restore the urban form, to fill in the gaps in the pedestrian realm, and street wall, and to recreate active frontages. That's for the benefit of not just those blocks, but all the blocks and businesses in the district. Third, using infill to meet other important goals that are in the Central City Plan, both for the Central City as a whole and for this district, which include adding housing density at a transit station. This is kind of a fundamental principle that we see throughout the Central City and actually throughout our transit system citywide. And also, in the Central City, because of the investments and the importance of the district, it's a big policy objective to eliminate vacant lots and underutilized parcels, and especially to find productive uses or more productive uses for surface parking. Finally, the infill strategy that we're bringing to Chinatown, Japantown, that helps meet Comp Plan Policy 4.48, is that this infill development is essential to support the district's economic and social vitality. And that vitality, that success, that life in the district is critical for us to be able to sustain the cultural and historic uses in the district as well as its newer uses. Put together, we think this combination of preservation and thoughtful infill development accomplishes the goals or the purpose set out in that comp plan policy. Next slide, please. So that's the proposal that's in front of City Council today. Today is a hearing, as the mayor said. After the hearing today, there'll be follow-up with additional work sessions. And we're hoping to get to second reading and final vote in July. With a regular adoption of this Central City Plan, the code would be back in effect 30 days after second reader. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Joe. Did anybody have any questions for Joe before we moved on to Kristen? Not seeing any just yet. We'll move on next then to Kristen Miner, the chair of the Landmarks Commission. Good afternoon.
Maybe you can hear me now?
Yep, now we can. Thank you.
Great. Okay. I am trying to keep my testimony into your 3-minute window, and I just have a couple of slides to share with you. So trying to see if I'm going to be able to see them on my screen here.
Kristen, if you need a couple of extra minutes, the technology is already hard to manage. So if you need a minute or two extra, don't worry about it.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, if you could keep it under, say, 5 minutes, I'd appreciate it. But because you are a commission chair, we're not going to hold you to the same standard as public testimony.
Great. So I appreciate the overall view from Joe Zinder. There's been so much good work under Central City 2035. And of course, we're just zooming in, as are my comments, on the maximum allowed heights in the new Chinatown-Japantown Historic District. As Joe Zinder pointed out, this is a very small district, only 10 blocks. And so I'd like to show you very briefly the district over time. So I have three images here up on the screen. And after I talk through these for just a minute, I have some points about how the Landmarks Commission functions. So if you would start with me on the left-hand side of the screen. So we're seeing the district, this is obviously an aerial view, in 1990. So 30 years ago, and this was just after the district was first listed on the National Register. And I'm showing the heights of buildings. Those are the little numbers that are showing up on all of the buildings. At that time, they were almost all 1 to 4 stories, with one exception that you can see there along Fifth Avenue at 7 floors. And that's the building that PDC now occupies. Another thing to notice here is the pattern of development or footprint. So it's pretty noticeable here. All the buildings are a quarter block or smaller. There is one long and very skinny exception along Burnside that I don't know if you can even see. It's the number three down there. But I'll come back to height and pattern in a second. Next, moving to the middle image, and by the early 2000s, two new large developments had been constructed. So you can see those by the number of stories there, the 8-story and then the 15-story, as well as the Chinese Garden, which is just outside the district there on the right. So the 15-story building is about 160 feet tall. And I do want to point out that it respects the pattern of development with a quarter block footprint, but it is still out of scale because of its height. And it makes this building very noticeable and harder for the district to tell its story of Japanese and Chinese immigrant cultures who settled here and made their mark on older existing buildings. So then fast forward to 2017, just a couple of years ago. By then, several contributing buildings had been torn down. You can see that by the zero down along Burnside there. And then up in the upper right-hand corner, this used to be the Dirty Duck Tavern, replaced by a new 4-story building, as well as a promise that the old Blanchet House would be maintained and refurbished, although that promise was not kept. And then down again near Burnside, an addition to the Globe Hotel at a 9-story addition. 2017 was also the date of the newly adopted design guidelines for the district. And that leads me to talking about design guidelines for just a second. And the most basic principle of design guidelines is compatibility with the original historic buildings. So, you know, we're not trying to look at any of the newer buildings that have come in. We're really measuring massing and height as the most critical component of compatibility. And it's very important that the district, any district, have a unified character and kind of appearance. Not all buildings the same, of course, and certainly there can be quite a range. But, you know, we're starting from a point of the kind of 1-story to 7 stories. And beyond that, you know, a little bit certainly may still be compatible, but the team working on the design guidelines for this district agreed that 15 stories was not compatible. I also want to point out that there really aren't differences in pattern or scale moving north to south or east to west. I mean, again, that's only 2 blocks wide. So, you know, the idea that there would be different heights, north to south, or, you know, even east to west, is just not supported by what's there. So the Landmarks Commission is going to continue to do our job, and that is assess whether a new design is compatible with the district and on its site. Actually, let's go ahead and go to the next slide, if you will. Thank you. This is just obviously a quick grab from Google Street View, and what we're seeing here on the right is that 15-story building. And I guess, you know, my question is really, is this compatible? Is this continuity? When City Council signals approvals of heights and bulk that are significantly out of scale with the existing pattern, even with the acknowledgement that the Landmarks Commission has the power to deny out-of-scale proposals, you do send the message that our work is simply an obstacle to be overcome. And perhaps more troubling, that you don't necessarily support the preservation of this particular district. So I'm asking today for City Council and the mayor to reconsider your support for inappropriate heights in this district, especially on Block 33, which seems to have been singled out as a spot zone with incompatible height and bulk allowances that offer no tangible benefit towards the preservation of this historic district. And that's all I have. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And then with that, I believe, Carla, we go to public testimony.
Did my associate have something to add, Kristen?
Yes, Maya, are you there?
Maya, are you unmuted?
Yep, I just got unmuted. I am here.
Okay, good.
Can you hear me? Wonderful.
Yep, you're good to go.
Hi, thank you. Hello, council members. This is Maya Fodi, vice chair of the Landmarks Commission. The housing crisis in Portland has elected leaders not only in Portland, but at the state level looking for creative solutions to the lack of sufficient affordable housing. We look to the City Council to provide consistent leadership, to support the comprehensive plan, and to take the long view of any and all solutions. As volunteers appointed by the mayor to protect historic resources in our city, we too are concerned with the housing crisis and support the need for more density in our city. However, discounting the public process that recommended heights of 125 feet in the north and 100 feet at the south end, and instead allowing potentially up to 200 feet, would encourage developers to propose very large buildings in a district with diminutive historic commercial and residential buildings, as my colleague Commissioner Miner pointed out. Bigger is not always better. Will large towers on a fragile 10-block area truly help defray the housing crisis? How can they be designed to meet the carefully researched design guidelines of the historic Japantown Chinatown Historic District that the Landmarks Commission is mandated to enforce, the goals of which are, and I quote, to allow change to take place in a mindful way that brings vibrancy to the district while retaining the important architectural and cultural qualities that make it a unique historic neighborhood. Instead of fixating on encouraging new tall buildings, we need to focus on finding ways for urban renewal money to go into rehabilitating existing buildings in historic Japantown, Chinatown. We need to nurture the existing historic building stock that is such an important part of Portland's past, and we also need to find ways to help current business owners to thrive. It is possible to create more density in the small district just by renovating existing underused buildings, encouraging new buildings on formerly vacant lots, and adding vertical additions above some of the district's older buildings. There must be ways to identify incentives to encourage rehabilitation of existing building stock. On a final note, I wanted to remind the council on recent testimony that was given at the Landmark State of Preservation Address last week by PAE about their proposed new building in Old Town, the first net zero carbon building in Portland and the largest in Oregon. Their building, which was unanimously approved by Landmarks, was about 5 stories, I think, at about 75 feet, which is the height limit in the area. One of the reasons that they mentioned they chose the site was because they could put their solar array on the roof and know that the building light can never be blocked by a taller building. By encouraging development of tall buildings, we are at the same time discouraging the development of other equally valuable building types. As part of their net zero carbon 2050 initiative, New York City passed legislation that all new buildings are to be net zero by 2035. These types of buildings are the future and they need access to light. And to second Commissioner Miner's last statement, please reconsider your support for inappropriate heights in this district, especially on Block 33. Thank you.
Carla, unless there's any questions from my colleagues, we can go to public testimony. How many people do we have signed up?
We have 36 who signed up, and I think we've got about 28 so far online.
All right, very good. 2 minutes each, please. Name for the record.
Okay, the first person is Carrie Strickland, and she'll be followed by Wendy Rahm and Liz West.
Very good. Welcome.
Thank you. This is Carrie Strickland. I'm located at 811 Southeast Stark. I'm the principal of Works Progress Architecture, a woman-owned architecture firm, which I founded in 2005. I'm an active member of my community and belong to several volunteer boards and organizations that focus on planning codes and the built environment. Zoning and land use regulations are the means by which both public and private values guide how our cities are developed. They create the benefits that our political, social, and economic systems operate within in the context of our daily physical interactions. In the case of the 2035 plan, many community members, including myself, worked closely with officials and city staff for years to test strategies and put forth long-range development guidelines that look ahead to promote the sustainability of our city. However, when a small group or individual, no matter how well-being, decides that their own personal feelings or interests are worth more than the collective, the system breaks down. The appeal process has had unintended consequences on the collective ambitions of our city. It has stalled or stopped many, many projects, including senior housing, affordable housing, and supportive housing, all of which are sorely needed in the central city. It's also served to confuse land use policy with design-related discretionary review concerns, related items such as scale, form, and character appropriateness, which are articulated within a design or landmarks review process. This all comes at a time when we are already struggling to meet housing demand and work towards affordability, made worse by the current pandemic and the severe economic impacts yet to come. This is a monumental piece of land use policy that has already gained support of the collective communities it'll serve and by council itself. You now have the opportunity and the responsibility to reinforce and support that collective by swiftly readopting the policy that you voted into place 2 years ago, therefore cementing faith in the process for community engagement, faith in our leaders to act quickly when it is needed, and in forward-looking ambitions.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Next is Liz Westman, and she'll be followed by Tom Clark and Raymond Cheng.
Good afternoon, Liz. Liz, are you unmuted? Carla, we're having some problems with Liz, I think.
If you're on a phone, do star six.
Oh, good call. Yeah, Liz, if you're on the phone, you have to poke star six on the keypad.
Looks like she was signing on by a computer.
Let's move on to the next person. If you could monitor Liz, if she comes back on, let's get her in. We'll get her in line next.
Okay. But first, Keelan, I'm not seeing any microphones by any of the other names. Do we know if they are connected?
Yeah, the microphones will pop up when they're allowed to talk.
Okay, thank you. Let's go with Tom Clark, who will be followed by Raymond Cheng.
Tom, are you there?
I hope so. Can you hear me?
Yep, good okay. To go.
Great. Mayor and commissioners, this is Tom Clark. I'm an architect and Old Town property owner at 333 Northwest 5th. And I'm an active member of the Old Town Community Association since 2014. I also participated in updating the Chinatown-Japantown Historic District Design Guidelines. The need for housing and business development in Old Town has been widely observed by others, so I'll focus on one specific thing here, which is why I support CC 2035, including the increased height allowance. I believe that 27 contributing historic buildings give the district its unique character, and they must be honored. I would like to comment on why these two things are not mutually exclusive, increased height and honoring the historic resources. The comprehensive plan policy 4.48 encourages infill development with three criteria: within the established urban fabric and while preserving and complementing historic resources. We've heard from Joe about the established urban fabric dimensions of that. Generally, we can take this to mean completing the street wall and contributing to street activity, which is really the not only plugging the gaps, but creating an urban experience that has value. The requirement for preserving historic resources is guaranteed for these 27 buildings due to its historic district status. The other one that has a lot of conversation about is complementing historic resources. Complementing is a key question. I suggest the proposed height limit is really not a threat to the historic district if new buildings are designed to complement. The design review process will actively ensure this with the tools that it has, particularly the district guidelines, design guidelines. The guidelines clearly anticipate larger buildings, not only by not limiting height, but it provides a very detailed guide to design review and landmarks commissions to ensure that larger structures don't overpower the smaller ones.
2 minutes is up.
Beg your pardon?
2 minutes has gone by.
Oh, I thought I had three.
2 minutes today, so if you could just wrap up your final thoughts.
All right. I just want to point out one specific thing about for taller buildings. The guidelines suggest compatibility with heights can be addressed by thinking about buildings having two zones, a lower zone within the general heights of the district and an upper zone above that height. It specifically recommends either a podium or platform mass at the new building's lower levels and stepping back upper stories, or separating them with projecting horizontal elements. We have good examples in our own city. One of the greatest ones is the Ladd Tower on Southwest Broadway, which does exactly this, as well as many buildings in the South Waterfront. So I believe that the increased height limits, in summary, will promote needed development in Old Town and increasing the comprehensive plan's goal of infill within the urban fabric and preserving and complementing the historic resources. Thank you.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Next is Raymond Chang, and he'll be followed by Peter Englander.
Raymond, you on?
Can you hear me? Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Mayor Wheeler, Commissioner Udaly, Commissioner Fritz, and Commissioner Hardesty. My name is Raymond Chang. I serve as the president of the board for the Lanshu Chinese Garden. As I'm appearing in front of you today, I would like to affirm Lanshu Chinese Garden's support for the readoption of the Central City 2035 plan to allow the 200-foot building height for the four city block located west of the garden. It was exactly 2 years ago today when the City Council held a public hearing to consider increasing the proposed building height for block 33 and the four city block located west of the garden from the proposed 125 feet building height in the Central City 2035 plan to 200 foot. At the hearing, there was a number of people from the garden and friends of the garden presented to speak against the proposed 200 foot building height. I myself also joined other people writing letters to the city council against the proposed 200 foot building height. You might be wondering why the garden would change our position on this issue now. The reason for the garden to oppose the proposed building height increase, because at the time we believe the shadow from a 200 foot building cast over the garden would kill the plants and the fish in the garden. It would also cause the wood building in the garden to rot. After the city council vote to approve the building height increase at the hearing, our executive director at the time, Lisa Jane, who is no longer with the Guard now, was preparing to join Portland Chinatown History Foundation Restore Oregon, an Oregon Decay Endowment, to file an appeal for the 200-foot building height. I was the vice president of the board at that time, and I urged the board to take a step back to look into this issue before we take any further action. So we brought in a horticulture expert to present to us whether a 200-foot building located west of the garden would have any effect to the plant and the fishes in the garden. We learned from the horticulture expert that the plant in the garden received adequate sunlight, mainly from the south side, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. for most of the year. The shadow from a 200-foot building on the west side of the garden would not cast over the garden until 3 p.m. And it has little or no effect to the plant and the fish in the garden, especially fish like to stay in the shaded area of the pond.
Time is up.
I'll be back. Okay. Also, the wood building in the garden would never rot so long they protected with good coat of paint. So when the garden got word a month ago that the city council will have a hearing today to consider the readoption of the Central City 2035 plan, we took a look at this issue again. We found out the garden was benefited greatly from the Central City 2035 plan because the building height for the city block south of the garden was reduced from 250 feet to 100 feet, which is crucial for the well-being of the plants of the garden. Also, any new building next to the garden would require to do a shade analysis. So at our board meeting 2 weeks ago, our board voted unanimously to support the readoption of the Central City 2035 plan and the 200-foot building height for the 4-block west of the garden. We also want to convey this message to City Council.
Thank you, and we got it, and we appreciate the support and the comments. We have to move on. We've got a lot of
people. Okay, all right. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony.
We might have Liz Westman, see if she's available to connect now.
Sure, let's try it.
Liz, are you there? Like she may still be having problems. So.
All right, well, we can try her later if she pops
sure.
up. Why don't you
okay.
go to the next?
All right, let's go with Peter Englander, and he'll be followed by Patricia Cliff.
All right. Hi, Peter.
Good afternoon, Mayor and City Council members. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, loud and clear.
Great. Everyone, I am Peter Englander. I reside in South Tabor, but I am the vice chair of the Old Town Community Association as well as the co-chair of its Land Use and Transportation Committee. I represent Deadstock Coffee in that capacity. Knowing that you were going to limit testimony, I have submitted written testimony that complements the letters that the Community Association made, so I'm just going to make a few points to stay within my 2 minutes. This district was approved in 1989. In 1988, we had a central city plan that north of Everett allowed for 350 feet of height in our district. Despite all of that entitlement at the time, you know, other factors in this neighborhood that I'm about to explain has really inhibited a celebration of many, many cultures in this neighborhood. And it has taken extraordinary efforts every time development has occurred in the neighborhood. In addition to tax increment, amazing feats, including the Lansu Chinese Garden. I want to inform everybody of our housing numbers in our community, which we've kept for decades. 50% of the housing stock in the Old Town community is at 50% or below area median income and recovery housing and shelters and transitional housing. 35% is at the 60% or workforce level. That means we only have 15% of our entire neighborhood, and within this new Chinatown, Japantown district mirrors the same percentages is market rate housing. To the point of really focusing on rehabilitating the older buildings that exist in the district, that's been very, very tough because most of them are owned in situations that are land rich and cash poor. Even in the situation of a little fire station that's just outside the district, rehabilitation of that two-story building, the value of that building was going to be less than half or about half the cost to rehabilitate that building, which was something like $15 million. So You'd have value of about $6 million with a rehabilitation cost of over that amount. We've completely missed this cycle. I think that there are a lot of creative solutions that we can implement to celebrate the cultures. And in talking with Restore Oregon, I think there's a lot of commonality in approaches. I'm almost done, including a blight ordinance, which I think is worth it to consider. We need to bring people to our neighborhood. And I echo my predecessors in how we might be able to do it in this historic district. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter. Appreciate your testimony.
Next is Patricia Cliff, and she'll be followed by Rita Silen.
Hello, Patricia.
Can you hear me?
Yep, you're good to
okay.
go.
Okay, thank you very much. Good day, Mayor and City Council members. My name is Patricia Cliff. I am a resident of the Pearl, where I have owned a home for the past 10 years. Prior to making Portland my principal permanent residence, I spent 45 years living and working in the real estate business in Manhattan as a real estate attorney, marketer of high-end residential commercial real estate, consultant to major developers, and passionate pro bono activist for affordable housing and homeless issues. I continue to consult nationally on these subjects. I am president of the Pearl Neighbors for Integrity in Design, a nonprofit whose mission it is to promote livability and good architectural development, which incorporates affordable family housing in the central city with strong emphasis on resolving and the escalating homeless issue in Portland. I am testifying here today because of my concern for the future of the livability, economic well-being, and health of citizens of Portland at this crucial time. The Central City 2035 plan was 7 years in discussion and has been in effect for the past 2 years. In many ways, it has proven to be a law of unintended consequences. Most importantly, it has failed to provide the needed affordable housing, which was one of its goals. Having lived and worked through the multiple recessions of the past decades, including the savings and loan debacle of 89-91 and the recession of 2008-2009, I am only too aware that crisis conditions require well thought out creative solutions. A simple readoption of the 2035 Central City Plan with minor alterations at this time does not fulfill this need. In the intervening years, the houseless population of the Portland city has grown, and the human suffering, degradation, and deteriorating health of those living on the street have reached unimaginable proportions. This has been further exacerbated by the advent of the COVID-19 virus. Whose long-reaching effects are impossible at this time. For this reason, we respectfully request that the City Council abandon efforts to reinstate the Central City 2035 plan at this time and postpone its reenactment until the newly elected 5-member City Council is seated in 2021. Here's my last sentence. In the interim, a careful reevaluation of the emerging issues concerning the forthcoming economic and real estate crisis affecting our city should be considered and evaluated as they develop by the present 4-city member city council, community stakeholders, nonprofit organizations, and citizens of Portland. Thank you for your time and attention to this.
Yeah, thank you.
Next is Rita Silen, and then we'll try Liz Westman again.
Hello, Rita, and we really want to make sure everybody who signed up has a chance to testify, so if people could really keep it to 2 minutes. Make your points. We'd appreciate it.
I will do my best. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and City Council members. I am also a resident of the Pearl District for 20 years, but also an advanced practice nurse practitioner for 42, 18 of which was at the Portland VA Medical Center. And I've worked in international relief pro bono twice. I have had trips exposed to SARS and once to Ebola in West Africa. We know for a fact that best practices do matter. Proximity and duration when we are dealing with virus transmission is indisputable. The 2035 plan promotes density at what cost? And we cannot predict our new normal. COVID will not be the last viral threat. SARS wasn't. Ebola wasn't, H1N1 or Zika weren't. In the Pearl District, we know, according to the Johnson Economic Survey data available upon request, that we have a population in the Pearl District itself of 13,500 residents. That calculates out on a square mile basis to 31,000 per square mile. Now, that makes it the densest of all of the 10 central city neighborhoods. And soft data suggests that between 50 and 65% of those people are senior citizens who we know are more susceptible to serious complications should a virus be contracted. Also in the Pearl, we have been fortunate to have 7 affordable housing or inclusionary housing buildings welcoming diversity and really good neighbors, none of those buildings are higher than 12 stories. The 12th story on 2 of those is a observation deck. The other 5 buildings of inclusionary housing top out about 7 or 8 stories. So what is the benefit of density and height plan when even Mr. Zinder made reference to the pedestrian realm, and we have humans living on the street in their excrement and the excrement of their neighbors, subjecting themselves to hepatitis A risk and to unsuspecting neighbors who walk on that sidewalk and take it home to the family. Thank you. And I would close by saying, please reconsider your support for height and density and perhaps devoting more energy to affordable family housing. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Rita. We appreciate your testimony.
We're going to try Liz Westman again.
All right. Liz, are you there? Carla, is Liz on the phone or is she on the phone?
She was going to sign up by computer.
I can see her, Mayor, but her mic is on mute.
Liz, if you take your cursor down to the lower left-hand corner of your screen, you'll see a little microphone thing. See if you can find that and press on the microphone and see if that unmutes you. Maybe, Carla, what we could do is, because now it's become sort of a problem I'm determined to solve before we adjourn. Maybe if you could just call her and then put her on your cell phone and then put your cell phone on speaker into the microphone, and then we could just hear what she has to say that way. I've had to do that a couple of times and it seems to work okay.
Okay, I have her number. I'll try to give her a call in just a second here.
So why don't you call the next person in the meanwhile?
Okay, we'll go with Mary Vogel, and she'll be followed by Joseph McGee.
All right. Hello, Mary.
I'm Mary Vogel, a climate resiliency, climate justice consultant based in downtown's West End, who has been involved in CC 2035 since its inception. So much airtime was given to neighbors in the 18-story Elliott Tower condominiums who wanted height limits for the rest of the West End to be limited to 100 feet, that those of us on Southwest 12th didn't get sufficient consideration of our health, safety, and air quality and other resiliency concerns. Residents in the low-income buildings that populate much of Southwest 12th are, along with Southwest 13th, downtown's buffer to the worst of the noise and air pollution from I-405, some of the worst in the nation, in fact. I'm not going to explain the slide, but I'll be happy to take questions afterwards. So I'm asking you to consider a new design for Southwest 12th Avenue from Southwest Montgomery to West Burnside, one that better fits the original proposal from PBOT to make Southwest 12th the urban greenway my neighbors and I deserve to better protect our health. Next slide, please. Keelan, next slide, please. Okay, I want you to consider adding to Central City 2035 our subsequent subsequent street plans, an improved version of this crude vision I did on street mix. Again, I'm not going to explain it here, but I'm happy to take questions. I spent a lot of time trying to find out what happened to that urban greenway that Peabot had originally proposed until investigative journalists like Jonathan Mauss and Sarah Merck of the Mercury explained how West End business owners and Portland Business Alliance got the project mixed. My plan assumes that you are keeping the eco-roof requirement that myself and others worked so hard to get into the plan. In summary, whether or not you put the Southwest Avenue Urban Greenway back in Central City 2035 or into some other plan, please bring it back to protect those of us on the front line of pollution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Appreciate your testimony.
Mayor, I got a hold of Liz and she was just observing. She is not going to give oral testimony today.
All right, very good. That's fine. Glad you were able to reach her. Thank you, Carla. Next person.
You're welcome. Sure. Next, we'll go with Joseph McGee and he'll be followed by Linda Alper.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and members of the City Council. I appreciate that the mayor mentioned earlier. This is weird because I can't see any of you. Can you see me? Hello?
I see a flower.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's my icon, I guess. Okay, you're better off looking at the flower than me. Okay. But anyway, Mayor, you mentioned that you wanted that the scope of the hearing is very narrow. But you generously said you would allow a broader range of comments. And I appreciate that because I don't really want to focus on the narrow. And I sent a separate communication to all of you earlier in the week. But I just think in light of the surreal situation we're all living in, that this opportunity to revisit the plan, which while focused on a narrow issue, is yet an opportunity to look at the big picture. And if ever there's a time to look at the big picture, it is now. I really think it behooves the council and everyone in the city to take a look at our land use future, given this opportunity that was provided by the narrow issue, because we're living in with an unprecedented crisis, and it means we're going to have an unprecedented future. And I really think there are a lot of land use implications that should be looked at, and they have public health implications also. And to try and stay within the time limit, since not everybody seems to be able to do that very well, that the people from the preservation groups earlier mentioned urging the city council to reconsider support for incompatible heights. I thought that was a good theme. And also the point that somebody made about bigger is not always better. And I would say, especially in light of the future we might have because of this pandemic, that's especially true. So I would just urge you to take a big picture, long range view, and put this thing on pause. And let's take it doesn't have to end, but we should look at the whole thing in the context of what we have upon us now and the future we're going to be dealing with. Thank you very much for your time and attention.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you, Joseph.
Linda Alper is just observing, so we're going to go with Jacqueline Peterson Loomis, and she'll be followed by Lynn Fujigama Parks.
Very good.
Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
All right, great. I'm going to try to make this short. I have a letter which is being sent in, which is a bit longer. It is in this moment such a moment of real human catastrophe and potential change of such monumental proportions that it is really hard, actually, as Peter said, that this one cycle, the building cycle, is past. I think there are several cycles that are going to pass here before the kinds of buildings that are being imagined here of this height ever really happening. But I think, though, it is important at this time in the midst of, kind of crosstalk about the need for affordable housing in a district which in the 2035 plan was never designated for more affordable housing. As Peter said, we need more market rate, more student housing, more workforce housing. But most importantly, we really do need to go back to what the 2035 plan's goals, said for this particular district among many others. And it was never designated for greater density or high-rise development or affordable low-income housing. That plan talks and its goals talk about the human scale of its two historic districts and recommends their preservation through adaptive reuse and compatible infill. The stated vision is a vibrant mix of multicultural, largely Asian American and African American cultural destinations, universities, retail and entertainment businesses, yes, continuing social services, but a much needed mixture of market rate student and workforce housing. We really thought the City Council had listened and had demonstrated its commitment to the preservation of the city's multicultural past, especially those communities of color who throughout the first 100 years of Portland's history were either barred from entry on the basis of race and nationality, as the case with Chinese workers, or prohibited from property ownership and citizenship to their native-born status. The racism, discrimination, and violence which persisted throughout that century would continue through the 20th, and it's again rearing its ugly head for those who are its intended targets and victims. The new Chinatown-Japantown National Historic District is the home place, the immigrant origin story for Chinese Americans throughout the city and state. Similarly, Old Town neighborhoods served as the entry point for Japanese American immigrants, African Americans, Greek Americans, German and Sephardic Jewish immigrants to Portland.
Time is up.
Can I just finish this, please? It is with the deepest sadness that Chinese American elders whose ancestors built both Old and New Chinatown in Portland's downtown waterfront are now sensing the end of their community's physical presence, hastened by the ravages of COVID-19. This is only 10 square blocks, and despite disinvestment, demolition by neglect, and recent decline, the stories, histories, and culture are still alive in the streets and inside the remaining 10 historic buildings owned by Chinese Americans in Chinatown. To lose those buildings and the streetscape around them is to lose the memories and ultimately the stories themselves to the impoverishment of our city. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next is Lynn Fuchigama Parks, and she'll be followed by Peggy Moretti.
Good afternoon. My name's Lynn Fuchigama Parks, and I'm the Executive Director of the Japanese American Museum of Oregon. I'd like to use this time for the important discussion about retaining the cultural heritage embodied in this district, not erasing it. I'm here to call out about erasure and displacement because we have historically done a poor job of respecting the existence of both native lands and ethnic neighborhoods and the important role they have played in the evolution of our city. For the new Chinatown-Japantown Historic District, its erasure of history, community, culture, and the remaining resources and fabric of the neighborhood where so many diverse communities got their start. This district is a unique asset as it tells stories that no other part of the city can. It includes the story of Portland's vibrant Japantown or Nihonmachi, 12 blocks with over 100 thriving businesses, the Japanese American community, and the Japanese American community until fear and racial prejudice resulted in their forced removal and unjust incarceration. Japantown disappeared within a week's notice, so by May 6, 1942, not a single person of Japanese ancestry could be found in the city, as it declared itself Jap-free. This is what erasure looks like. But this place that was once home still held such deep significance. We built the Japanese significance. We built the Japanese American Historical Plaza and Bill of Rights Memorial as a reminder of this history and the fragility of freedom and rights under the Constitution. Then we opened a museum to preserve and share this history in the place where it began. And most recently, we invested in a multi-million-dollar project purchasing space from the city for our new permanent home in this place that means everything. This neighborhood means everything to the Chinese community as well, who built what was once our country's second largest Chinatown that thrived and grew despite banned immigration and discriminatory laws. This district is important because it not only embodies important cultural and multi-ethnic history, it embodies survival, resilience, and the fight against erasure. It's about who we are and what we're willing to stand for and not sacrifice for short-sighted solutions to problems. Almost every major city in the U.S. has an old town or historic district that has been thoughtfully protected and developed, and has done so at compatible heights. And in closing, I want to add that we support the actions that will be putting forth by Restore Oregon in the following testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Actually, next is Steve Dodder, and he'll be followed by Peggy Moretti.
Hello, Council. My name is Steve Dodder, and I'm representing the Architectural Heritage Center. I just want to say that when our groups appealed the decision, we had a vision of the district as a lively mixed-use district with hundreds of new housing units, as well as office and retail, and buildings that replace the surface lots that exist today. But we also believe that the district should present a link to the stories of Chinese American and Japanese American and other groups that played a significant role in making Portland what it is today and what it would be in the future. The district was really created to tell those stories. We're concerned about the 200-foot height for a couple reasons. First of all, the allowance for taller buildings carries really two major risks. The first is that the new construction at these heights could easily overwhelm the existing buildings. And I have sent some images to show you both compatible infill that's happened recently in the Skidmore Old Town District and higher buildings within the 200-foot limit elsewhere. The second item, I think, is the concern about the loss of the existing buildings through demolition by neglect and the lack of financial assistance in updating the buildings to meet current functionality and to be seismically secure. Finally, I want to note that the significance of this district is cultural and not for its architectural distinction. Landmark architecture like the Ladd Carriage House on Broadway can stand up to a 20-story new apartment house because Mr. Ladd had the money and the prestige to build it that way. The occupants of Chinatown, Japantown did not have that ability. They lived plain and lives, and they had to adjust to ordinary buildings to meet their needs. In order to be recognized, the district has to be large enough and secure enough, and enough of the older buildings have to exist in order that people recognize that it is a different place and that there's a story to be told here that all of us will benefit from. To make this happen requires partnerships and the city to take an active management role in the creation of the district. And that's just not just in the zoning and the historic design review, but also in political and bureau staff attention, as well as in financial assistance. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Steve.
Next is Peggy Moretti, and she'll be followed by Helen Ying.
There we go. Hi, I'm Peggy Moretti, Executive Director of Restore Oregon, and I'm very glad we're having this hearing today. Restore Oregon filed an appeal of Portland's Central City 2035 plan with our co-petitioners, the Architectural Heritage Center, the Oregon Nikkei Endowment, and Portland Chinatown History Foundation, out of deep concern that this fragile historic place that embodies precious Chinese, Japanese, and African-American cultural heritage would be lost because it would be literally swallowed up by grossly out-of-scale development. Compatible development within historic districts is a topic on which Restore Oregon has expertise. In 2012, we published a special report entitled Compatible Infill Design, Principles for New Construction in Oregon's Historic Districts, which has been widely endorsed by the National Trust and urban design experts such as Stephen Sems. I also served on the committee that developed the design guidelines for the district, which were approved by City Council, as you know. To be sure, this small but very important historic place desperately needs investment, redevelopment of its many surface parking lots, and some deep cleaning. But that does not need to come at the cost of its historic identity. We envisioned that a revitalized district, including hundreds of new units of housing, creative office space, and retail, could be achieved at a more compatible scale. We still believe that. And there is no magic that will make a 20-story building compatible with a 2-story building. My co-petitioners have conveyed the profound cultural significance of this district to those communities who persevered through extreme injustice and racism. We've shared examples of compatible infill. So I'd like to focus the remainder of my testimony on the steps the city must take if it is indeed serious but ensuring the survival of the remaining historic fabric of Chinatown, Japantown. In addition to setting a more compatible height in the northern blocks, one, the city must codify clearly that zoned heights in historic districts are permissive, not an entitlement. They are a maximum, not a guarantee. Two, codify that the Landmarks Commission has authority to adjust heights and setbacks to ensure compatibility with historic context. Don't throw landmarks under the bus by putting them in an impossible position, and don't set yourselves up for contentious appeals of landmarks decisions. Three, take a stand against demolition by neglect. Pass an anti-blight ordinance with meaningful penalties. There should be no reward for letting a historic building fall into such disrepair that owners claim it's too far gone. The old Blanchet House and the Wong Laundry Building are two examples. And four, invest in restoration and resilience. Long promised urban renewal funds should be funneled into seismic retrofitting and restoration of the existing historic buildings and legacy businesses, not just into new construction. This amazing place tells a story of Portland's diverse cultural heritage. It is not too far gone, but it needs the city to take a holistic approach to its revitalization. Thank you for giving this your deepest consideration.
Peggy, this is Ted. Did you submit your testimony in writing?
Yes, I did.
Great. I'll look forward to getting that. I appreciate your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is Helen Ying, and she'll be followed by Daniel Manning.
Good afternoon, Helen.
Hi, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. I'm Helen Ying, and I come before you today with two hats, one as a Chinese American community member, another as the chair for the Old Town Community Association. I've served on the board of the association since its formation in 2012 with a personal goal of helping to revitalize the neighborhood, particularly in bringing life back into Chinatown. As the board stated in our letter of testimony, we and you are aware there are many challenges that has kept Old Town from thriving as desired. One being the lack of balance and density of housing. Another is the density of social services without enough balance of street level businesses to complement the treasured cultural and educational institutions in the neighborhood. This all translates into impediments for new development to filling in the many vacant lots, exacerbated in our opinion by disagreements on height for the new Chinatown, Japantown Historic District. Indeed, this disagreement has contributed to the lack of success leading up to and after Central City 25 Plan's adoption 2 years ago. We see the plight clearly today as we face an unprecedented situation with an overwhelmed number of street campers in the neighborhood amid the COVID-19 pandemic. We must beg the question of why and how did this happen? Old Town, a historic neighborhood where many groups have come and started their new lives in this country, has also served as a place where people find comfort and support to lift themselves back up, something we, the greater community, needs to help Old Town do better, as Old Town has always taken on significantly more burden. Now is the time to act and correct many inequities so we could help this neighborhood to turn the corner. Celebrating its history with our cultural institutions and architectural districts does not mean that we cannot have the needed height for sensible development and the much needed balanced housing. OTCA supports the readoption of Central City 2035 plan in its current form because providing flexibility for more density in Old Town, even in an historic district where such density is typically discouraged, is, in our opinion, the only way to save the district and its cultural backbone. We thank Adrian for readopting the Prosper Portland's 5-year action plan last year in support of the revitalization efforts. The Portland
Prosper Portland's action plan funds are still dedicated, tax increment alone will not adequately transform Old Town. We also need dense development of workforce and market rate housing to balance the current mix and enhance the street level activities, leveraging the arts, entertainment, culture, history, and design hub that is uniquely Old Town's.
Thank you.
Fears this may destroy the historic district are strongly protected by recently adopted new Chinatown, Japantown, and Skidmore Old Town design guidelines. So we urge you to readopt the Central City 2035 plan. It is crucial to the future success of Old Town.
Thank you, Helen. Appreciate it. And Carla, just before you read the next name, if you could go to the chat, there's a couple of people who wanted a response.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll check on those. Thank you. Next is Daniel Manning, and he'll be followed by Brian Fleener.
Hey, Daniel.
Hi. Well, my name's Dan Manning, and I'm a general contractor and a installer of eco roofs and green roofs and rooftop patios, decks, development gardens. And I can see that the conversation is not dealing with the entire Central City plan, but I am calling to ask for its, you know, confirmation in its current, because of the amount of time that was spent creating it in the first place. A lot of people spent thousands of hours creating the plan, and it should be ratified. So I actually agree with a lot of these people about Chinatown, Old Town. I think it's an incredible asset to the city and should be preserved as much as possible. And I can't imagine a 20-story building being next door to the Chinese Garden. But I'm calling to urge the city and development services to retain and keep the requirement of rooftop development a major portion of the 2035 plan in all of the district so that we can use the rooftop spaces, which are otherwise gone to waste. And a green roof is, all its benefits are known and a lot of people have spent their time. So that's my comment. I think we should keep it just the way it is, ratify it, get it going, and put a little more teeth in it and less exceptions. I don't think there needs to be a height restriction on eco roofs. I think they can put them on any building at any height, and they will create habitat and great living space and cool our city down when it needs it the most. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Next is Brian Fleener, and he'll be followed by James Wong.
So we need to sign out.
You can.
That was perfect.
Hi, Brian, you on?
But I could see I was out.
Brian?
Can you hear me now? Hello? Yes.
Loud and clear. You good to go?
I'm so sorry about that. Mayor Wheeler and council members, thank you so much for your service to Portland. It is greatly appreciated. My name is Brian Fleener, 808 Southwest 3rd Avenue, Suite 800. I am Director of Architecture at OTAC, a multidisciplinary design firm located here in downtown Portland. We currently employ about 320 people. I am testifying today in support of the staff's recommendations for the City Council to readopt the Central City 2035 plan without further delay and without substantive changes to the Central City Plan District amendments that were originally adopted by a City Council in June of 2018. The future of Portland has been given a broad and deep foundation to grow from past city leaders through our comprehensive mass transit systems and urban growth boundaries, a plan that is studied worldwide. Your approval is needed to ensure due process. When this plan was adopted, many of our clients started projects that use this new code as the basis for their business plans. We spent thousands of hours designing developments under the CC 2035 plan. If the City Council were to reopen elements of the Central City 2035 plan that were not at issue with LUBA appeals, as some have urged, it would completely undermine that legislative process and future legislative processes that would create significant uncertainty for all future development in the Central City. Your approval of Central City 2035 plan is needed now to support Portland's future as a sustainable and walkable city. Representing OTAC, I urge you, without further delay or substantive changes, to readopt the Central City 2035 comprehensive plan. Thank you again for your service, and thank you for my opportunity to provide testimony today.
Thank you, Brian, appreciate it.
Next is James Wong, and he'll be followed by Ray Harrigill.
Mr. Wong, welcome.
There, Mayor, can you hear me?
Loudly, yep, you're good.
Dear Mayor Wheeler and Central and Council members, I am James Wong. I'm an Asian American immigrant, hardworking property owner in the district. I am testifying to support the readoption of the Central City 2035 plan. I've grown up in the area since 1982. I love how the Pearl District have grown from a desolate, dying area to a vibrant, bustling neighborhood. We want to continue to invest and grow in the area. We rely on legislation and city code to do the proper investment that won't come into fruition sometimes more than 4 years later. I and many other real estate developers have spent a lot of time, creative work, and resources on planning great projects that add to the area. Changing the plan now would put our city's plan for moving the city forward backwards and put many hours and lots of time and perhaps tens of millions of dollars spent go to waste for projects in the current pipeline. Especially in tough economic times ahead, changing the zoning would put a lot of projects at risk and not happen, and no investments would be made in this area. Therefore, I urge you to support the readoption of the Central City 2030 plan that many of us have relied on. We are a law-abiding citizen, and we rely on laws being, once they're enacted, that we can rely on and do our work on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Next is Ray Harrigill, who will be followed by Casey McKenna.
Very good. Welcome, Ray.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm testifying today in support of the staff's recommendation for the City Council to readopt the Central City 2035 plan. I represent a proposed mixed-use development in the Central City that is currently going through the design review process. Our design review application was submitted in April of 2019 prior to LUPA's remand, and the project is in an area of the Central City that was not at issue in LUPA appeals. We, like other property owners and developers throughout the Central City, worked in good faith in compliance with code and development standards that the city made effective after a thorough and robust public process that resulted in the adoption of the Central City 2035 plan. We, like others, also made significant financial investments in reliance on the Central City 2035 plan and the city's process. If the City Council were to reopen elements of the Central City 2035 plan that were not at issue in the LUBA appeals, as some have urged, it would completely undermine that legislative process and would create significant uncertainty for all future development in the Central City. Therefore, the City Council's scope of review and deliberation should be strictly limited to the issues identified in the remand decisions. Additionally, we note that many have called for a delay in the City Council's decision until new City Council members take office following the November elections. The readoption of the Central City 2035 on remand has already been significantly delayed. Furthermore, the current council are the duly elected members charged with making decisions that come before them at this time. There is simply no reasonable justification for further delay. Finally, while Portland faces difficult challenges now than it did several months ago, now more than ever, it is critical to have certainty for development in the Central City. The way to create that certainty is to readopt the Central City 2035 without further delay. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ray. Appreciate it.
Next is Sherry Manning, and they'll be followed by Casey McKenna.
Hello, Sherry.
Hi there. My name is Sherry Manning. Dear Mayor and Council members, my name is Sherry Manning. I'm a longtime Southwest Portland resident, property owner, and small business owner. And I think I should probably alter my comments a bit. It sounds like the direction is changing and there's a lot of discussion about land use, but my comments today specifically relate to the eco roof requirement
in the city's 2035 Central City Plan. And I applauded the City Council in June 2018 when you elected to support the requirement. At that time, I'd just taken over the maintenance portion of my husband's contracting company and worked closely with Dr. Alyssa Starry at PSU's Honors College in the Urban Ecology Program, hiring four young women who worked on the eco roof at Walmart, and it enabled them to work directly with plants and observe their impact on water quality. The benefits that we've seen from eco roofs in and around the city are just amazing. From, you know, the eco roof that we put on Self Enhancement Inc. that gave kids a chance to grow tomatoes on their roof, to some of the roofs on close-in multifamily housing spaces that in densely populated Portland. Now more important than ever, we're seeing the impact of having green space accessible and available. So my comment today is that I urge City Council to just think back on the years of outreach and collaboration that went into developing this plan, and to I urge you to adopt the plan intact as is as soon as possible. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Sherry. Appreciate your testimony.
Next is Casey McKenna, followed by Gary Larson.
All right, Casey, hello. Casey, are you muted? Is Casey on the phone or is Casey on the computer?
Can you hear me, Mayor?
Oh, now I can. Yeah, you're good to go, Casey. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mayor and Council, for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Casey McKenna, and I am representing OTAC. We are a multidisciplinary design firm here in Portland. I am also a licensed architect and studio leader for a proposed mixed-use development in the Central City District. The project I am referencing is currently moving through a Type 3 design review process, and I am testifying today in support of staff's recommendation for the City Council to readopt the Central City 2035 plan without further delay or substantive changes to the Central City Plan District amendments that were originally adopted by the City Council in June of 2018. Prior to the LUBRA remand in April of 2019, the project I am referencing was submitted for land use review. The project is in an area of the Central City that was not at issue in the LUBRA appeals. Having observed the robust public process that it took to bring the Central City 2035 standards to fruition, our team, in conjunction with ownership, has worked diligently to comply with the code and development standards it prescribes. Significant financial investments have been made in this effort. Should City Council reopen portions of the Central City 2035 plan that were not at issue in the remand, this would severely undermine not only the legislative process, but create a development climate that would be wrought with uncertainty. Uncertainty in the development realm is the last thing Portland needs, especially in these difficult times. I urge Council to limit review and deliberation to the issues identified in the remand. It's noted that some have called for further delay in this decision so that new Council members can be seated in November. This process has already been significantly delayed. Kicking the can down the road will only postpone much needed jobs and housing for the Central City that are desperately needed now. There is simply no justifiable reason to delay this process any further. In closing, I urge you to do your part in providing a much needed degree of certainty by readopting Central City 2035 as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Casey. Appreciate it.
Next is Gary Larson, followed by John Tess.
Hi, this is Gary Larson. Can you hear me?
Yep. Hi, Gary.
I'm an architect, and my address is 808 Southwest 3rd in Portland. I have been involved in the in the business of creating the downtown of Portland for many, many years. I came here in 1968. And I have seen the wonderful work that the city leaders have put in place over these years that have created this city that we love and that many people are now flocking to. I think I'm appreciating the fact that you are focusing on the narrow issue of the remand. And just coincidentally, I was the architect for the 15-story building in this historic district. Our purpose there was to make it as compatible as we could to architecturally to what we found in the district. But I think there are two problems here that are really need to be solved separately. The first of them is to create code planning tools that can get some development started in this district. The whole notion of the place as a memorial to the past, the wonderful history of Portland that occurred here, is a different problem that takes a different kind of solution, which has to do with trying to produce more investment from the point of view of a cultural heritage. So I strongly advise that you should adopt the 2035 plan as offered by the staff and do it as quickly as possible so that we can get on to solving the new problems that occur as we move forward with our city's development. And I thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate it.
Next is John Tess, followed by Tom Brennecke.
Okay, good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and City Commission members. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. My name is John Tess. I'm president of Heritage Consulting Group. It's a national recognized historic preservation consulting firm. We are currently representing projects in over 32 states, and today I'm here to support the modifications to the height limitations in the new Japantown Historic District. I also submitted other testimony on this earlier on in April 2018. I'm not new to historic preservation. Many of you know me. I've been involved with historic preservation in the city of Portland since 1976, working under Leo Williams, who unfortunately recently passed away this last month. I have also been involved with many of the historic districts, including the Yamhill Historic District, Skidmore Old Town, creation of the 13th Avenue Historic District, Grand Avenue Historic District, conservation zoning in the city of Portland, and probably 90% of all the rehab projects in the city. I also am very familiar with Old Town. I had my office in Old Town for over 25 years and had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with my friend and mentor, Bill Nato, who was largely responsible for saving up a lot of those buildings in that part of the Old Town. I was also president of the business association while there. Steve Dotter initially had stated that wanted to remind us that the national register that the district was listed for its association with the Japanese and Chinese communities in the city, and that's an important point because unlike the architectural unlike an architectural resource such as the U.S. Bank Tower or the Wells Building or the Benson Hotel or the Benson House. This was listed not for architectural reasons. The national and thus the National Register generally has more flexibility when a site is important for its associative values in terms of design that goes there. So then, and this was proven when the 16-story, 160-foot Pacific Tower building was built in 2003, where the SHPO office and Park Service felt compelled to question the integrity or viability of the district. To the point that infill development is an important element to successfully redevelop our historic districts, I think that what the purpose of infill is to act as a catalyst for activity and renewed development for both the existing buildings and the new buildings being built.
Time is up.
Okay. I have some more, but that's okay.
Thank you, John. And we'll, of course, take your testimony and write it. I will. Thanks.
Next is Tom Brennecke, who will be followed by Tim Ramos.
Mr. Brennecke, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council members. My name is Tom Brennecke. Company is Guardian Real Estate Services. We're a local multifamily operator and developer. Headquartered in Portland, we maintain a deep commitment to the city and the New Chinatown, Japantown Historic District. Guardian owns the surface parking lot, also known as Block 33, in the district. It's been a great public parking lot for the past 50-plus years and has survived numerous development cycles. It serves the neighborhood well while delivering a reasonable return on our investment. However, the long-term intent when we purchased the land was to someday develop a mixed-use market-rate housing project. Despite the various challenges within this district, though, we continue to see the long-term potential of this neighborhood. We hope with the city's support and cooperation, we can move forward with a development on Block 33 at some point in the future. After our purchase in 2016, we immediately went to work with the city and the various stakeholders as a participant in the creation of a formal set of design guidelines for the district. Give and take like any process, but the district ended up with a solid set of guidelines that will guide neighborhood development for years to come. We've worked extensively over the last few years with the neighborhood. We formed a good relationship with leadership and heard their very clear messages about development on this block. We will continue to collaborate with them as we mutually seek to create a high quality project that meets the letter and spirit of the design guidelines and also serves as a catalyst for the neighborhood's future. Our vision includes a mix of market rate housing, affordable housing, retail, office, and potentially hospitality, along with enough parking to meet the demand from our project and the immediate neighborhood. I greatly appreciate the neighborhood's continued support for our block, which includes the height and density allowed and supported today by the City Planning Bureau and the neighborhood. And finally, we feel that this 2018 City Council vote on Block 33's staggered heights was a reasonable compromise that will give us much better odds of completing a great development in the future. I appreciate the time and effort various council members and staff have put into understanding these issues and that you will continue to support this important district of our city.
Thank you, Tom.
Next is Tim Ramos, followed by Nilsen Abil.
Mr. Ramos, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For your record, Tim Ramos, and I am legal counsel for the Block 33 project. As the mayor stated early on, this decision you'll make has a legal context. So I'd like to mention two aspects of the LUBA decision that might contribute to your conversation. The first is what LUBA actually ruled. They asked the council to adopt in writing a more detailed explanation for the policy decision that was made. They did not ask for change in the policy decision. They asked for more information. Your staff and city attorney have now put that information together. And we reviewed it. We believe it's completely consistent with LUBA's decision, and so we urge you to go ahead and adopt it as part of the plan. The second point is what LUBA did not say. LUBA did not agree with the argument of Restore Oregon that your policies somehow prevent buildings that are taller in nature from being built in this neighborhood. And we ask you, therefore, to honor the requests of people from the community to adopt the plan and move ahead with it as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ramos.
Next is Nilsen Abil, followed by Ted Labby.
Mr. Abil, welcome. Nilsen, are you on? Nielsen, are you on mute?
It looks like Nielsen might be trying to connect by phone, or?
That's possible, Keelan. Nielsen, if you're on the phone, try *6 on your keypad. go to the next individual and swing back to Nielsen.
Okay, next is Ted Labby, followed by Paul Delvecchio.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, City Council. My name is Ted Labby with the Urban Green Spaces Institute. Thank you for the opportunity to talk this afternoon with you, and thank you for your service to the city. I will be brief. I am going to encourage you to move ahead with readoption of the Central City 2035 plan. I was part of a broad coalition of advocates and eco-roof practitioners who encouraged you to include these requirements in the plan that was adopted in 2018. And I want to mention that I'm merely one of 67 individuals who submitted written comments to this remand, encouraging you to do just this, which is to readopt the eco-roof requirement as it currently is proposed. Staff has done an excellent job with preparing that for your consideration. Please no backpedaling on this. Please don't weaken the standard. It's an excellent standard, and it is the envy of a lot of other cities. I did not submit a letter, but I would encourage you to take a look at Jeff Joslin's letter from the Green Roofs for Healthy Cities, because it underscores the significance that this requirement it has to the city. It has created a whole ecosystem of eco-roof practitioners in the city. And by removing this requirement, you would undermine the economic activity that has built up around this new requirement. So please move forward with it, and thank you for your work.
Thanks a lot, Ted. Appreciate it.
Next.
Commissioner Fritz has her hand up. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to say to Ted, since you know that there were 67 people that wrote in, could you please tell those 67 people thank you very much, and that we and our constituent services staff may not be able to respond to everybody, but we do appreciate their testimony. Thank you.
I'll do what I can. I don't have all their contact information, but I'll get the word out. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Ted.
Next is Paul Vecchio.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Mayor Wheeler and council members. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify. I'm a founding principal of a company called Ethos Development. We're a local multifamily developer. And we have a sister company, Ethos Commercial Advisors, which is a commercial brokerage platform. I'm also on the real estate board committees of two nonprofits. One provides affordable housing, the other permanent supportive housing. I am in support of the 200-foot height limit in Old Town, although my testimony is going to focus on the urgency of reinstating the 2035 plan over the general Central City area. And I'm going to share some specifics as to what this might mean to people today. Our development firm has one project affected by this situation. It's a 85,000 square foot, seven-story building with 135 residential units in the Rose Quarter. This is a small building in the context of the Central City Plan District. We placed our work on hold on account of the uncertainty associated with this issue. And means we're not spending money on design or entitlement work. This job, when running at full speed, provides 10 to 12 professional jobs. That's a meaningful amount of jobs when you consider how we're all wondering where paycheck is going to come from. It was meaningful before. It's very meaningful now. Absent the zoning issue, we would have started this project in September, started construction. It now may be as late as February, if it happens at all. Sellers of property don't seem to care too much about COVID or zoning issues. It just looks like leverage. This construction project, again, a small one by the standards of Central City, would produce 350 construction jobs, several direct management jobs, and many, many tangential jobs, such as billing, city staff, insurance, delivery people, so forth. Affordable housing is a major component of this conversation. As a city, we decided to provide our affordable housing, or a large percentage of it, via market rate delivery mechanisms. This particular project has 5 3-bedroom units at 60% of AMI rents. That's meaningful family housing. And somehow, despite 10 years of development, we still... So taking a break from developing in our densest zones doesn't seem like it's accretive to our collective ambitions to keep housing costs at bay. And I know that every one of you on the council has some part of your platform dedicated to housing costs, and not moving forward swiftly is undermining those efforts. A prior testifier, well, I was going to echo the idea of uncertainty. This shows the world that we don't have certainty in our regulations here, and uncertainty is coupled with high expectations of returns, and that is also undermining our efforts towards affordable housing. So I implore you to restore the zoning as quickly as possible to allow all of our teams to get back to work at a time when they need it most.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate your testimony. Carla, can I just do a time check? How many more folks do we have signed up?
If Nielsen's back on the line, we have 4, including him.
Okay. Nielsen, are you back?
Hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
You can hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Nelson Abiel. I am a co-founder of the Pearl District Neighborhood Association, the president for 8 years, and a 28-year resident of a historic building, which I renovated in 1992. My background is as a real estate consultant. I spent 35 years in New York City, and my focus on this 2035 plan is very focused, and it's focused on the transfer of development rights. As a consultant in New York, I put together probably 10 to 12 different transfer of development right deals, and the initial effort behind the transfer of development rights was to benefit the immediate neighborhood. And at the start, most transactions had to be from abutting properties. And it later expanded in New York City to the block in which the transfers were going to happen. I find that the 2035 plan has got way too wide a scope of where developers can bring additional development rights in. And this is not the intent of having the transfer of development rights. It should benefit the immediate neighborhood, if not the adjacent properties. And to correct this, that portion should be brought out and redone. It is way too wide a network where property, I don't quite know the extent, but it's Area 1, and it's just too wide. It literally should apply to transfer from a smaller building into the new development in order to preserve the smaller building. And as the developer of a historic property, which is on the historic register in a federal historic district, I don't know of anybody that has approached any property owner on Northwest 13th Avenue Historic District as to the purchase of development rights. And I think this is an egregious mistake, which will just lead to unreasonable transfers of development rights. That's it for me.
All right, thank you. We appreciate your testimony.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Next is Joseph Schaefer.
Hello, Joseph.
Hi there. The comments that I were going to be making have been made by others, so I'm just going to say that I'm very much in support of this and thank Joe Zender and Rachel and the staff, and otherwise sign off. Thank you.
Well, that was our record short testimony today. Congratulations. We'll get you your door prize forthwith. Next.
Okay.
Thank you for your testimony.
Looks like the last person we have is Mary Coolidge.
All right, Mary, are you with us?
I am here. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Mary Coolidge. I'm with Portland Audubon.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here and testify today. I'm here to express support for the readoption of the Central City Plan and to share our general appreciation for the very good work of city staff and city council in developing and adopting strong environmental standards in the Central City Plan. As a stakeholder, Portland Audubon has worked closely with the city on a number of green elements in the Central City Plan, including eco-roofs, bird-safe glazing, river protection and restoration, tree canopy goals, and the Green Loop. We applaud these standards, which demonstrate the city's commitment to maintaining and ensuring the ecological integrity of our central city. We also applaud the spirit of the resolution that Council passed last week, acknowledging that now is the time to double down on our environmental and equity initiatives. So thank you for your leadership on environmental standards that make our city healthy and livable for both people and wildlife. And please do readopt the Central City Plan. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Appreciate your testimony. All right, that concludes our public testimony. Joe, we'll have you back to walk us through the next steps. It's my understanding we'll be continuing to July 2nd, where we'll have council work session and a vote on the amendment findings. Then I think on July 8th or 9th, we'll have our second reading and our final vote. And then sometime in August, the readopted Central City 2035 plan would go into effect. But could you walk us through what you believe the next steps are for the council?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. As the mayor said, we're going to leave the record open is one of the steps until June 4th at 5 p.m., a week from now, to allow for additional testimony, written testimony to be submitted. Portlanders can review the documents on the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability Central City 2035 website and then submit a written testimony in one of two ways. You can use the map app, portlandmaps.com, and select the testify button to enter your testimony, or you can send a letter to City Council. Central City Readoption Draft Testimony, 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue, Room 130, Portland, Oregon, 97204. This information is also on our website. As the mayor said, we're scheduled to come back to council for a work session on Thursday, July 2nd at 2 p.m. And there's going to be a second reading later that we're still looking for the date for. And then 30 days after that, the code, if approved, would go back into effect.
All right. So, Joe, just so I make sure I heard you correctly. So the record will remain open until June 4th.
June 4th, 5 p.m. there, yes.
June 4th at 5 p.m. So that is 1 week from today. And so we will be continuing this hearing to what date?
We're scheduled to come back. I think that we're scheduled to come back on Thursday, July 2nd at 2 p.m. I do not believe.
That's what I show.
Okay. Yeah, I think that we can close the verbal testimony today, that part of the hearing. We're keeping the written record open to July 4th at 5 p.m. And Lauren, please correct me if I'm misstating that, but I believe.
Lauren, is that accurate?
Well, Lindley covering, and Joe, I think you just misstated it's June 4th, not July 4th.
Oh, yeah, thank you. June 4th, 5 p.m.
Well, we know how to celebrate with a bang around here, don't we? Okay, so the oral record is now closed. The written record will be continued for 1 week to June 4th, 5 p.m. And then we will continue this hearing to July 2nd. Is that correct?
Correct. And it's for the purpose of council discussion and a vote on the amended findings.
Okay, very
no,
good.
No testimony will be taken on July 2nd.
Very good. Commissioner Hardesty. You just muted.
There we go. My mute didn't want to come off. It feels like you're about to close this out, and I just want to appreciate the real incredible work of Joe and his staff, and wanted to appreciate the public that came and testified today. we're all getting used to new technology. And so 90% of the time it works, but we have worked through the kinks as they show up. And I just want to appreciate it because these people may not be back when we actually take action. So I just wanted to acknowledge both all the hard work of the staff and the public that showed up. So thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Commissioner Artistee. Anything else for the good of the order before we adjourn? Lindley, do you need anything else from us from a legal perspective?
No, I think we're clear on next steps and when it's continued.
All right. Again, as Commissioner Hardesty said, thank you, everyone who testified today. Great testimony. Lots to follow up on. Lots of great ideas. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.